Lal Gopal's probably outside greeting people. He sent me... is he here? Here. Somewhere. Lal Gopal. Somewhere. Okay. Just... at the beginning of the week, Lal Gopal sent me a tentative schedule and a tentative topic list. And his suggestion was to continue Nectar of Instruction. That's what NOI stands for. Nectar of Instruction. By Rupa Goswami from where we left off. But some of you weren't here for the first part. So too bad. No, I'll give you a little summary. Like mini summary. But... that's what we're going to be doing, covering in the evening discussions the topic of nectar of instruction, or the Sanskrit is Upadesh Amrita. Upadesh Amrita by Rupa Goswami. Okay? So, first of all, who is Rupa Goswami? I'll describe a little bit. And as soon as we begin describing Rupa Goswami, we have to also describe Lord Chaitanya. The main deities in our New Jersey temple is the deities of Gaur Nittai. But many people, we did a little quiz, kind of like during a Sunday program, to ask people if they knew who Gaur Nittai were, and very few people knew who Gaur Nittai were, although it's the main deity in the temple. Similarly, here in St. Louis, Krishna Balaram and Nittai, Gaur Nataraj, Gaur Nittai, Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda. So, who is Lord Chaitanya? And Lord Chaitanya is, just as Krishna is to Balaram, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead who descended 5,000 years ago to perform his pastimes on earth just as they are performed in the spiritual world of Goloka Vrindavan. He manifested his pastimes here, just as Ramachandra manifested in Ayodhya the same pastimes that he performs in the spiritual world, in the transcendental realm of Ayodhya, in the spiritual sky. So as Krishna performed those pastimes with Balaram, Balaram appeared as his elder brother, so similarly, Lord Chaitanya, it's a long description, but stay around for Gaur Purnima and you'll hear all about it. Lord Chaitanya is Krishna himself teaching what Krishna taught, only teaching by example what Krishna taught in Bhagavad Gita. What did Krishna teach in Bhagavad Gita? He taught Sarvadharmam Parityaja Mamekam Sharanam Vraja Aham Tvam Sarva Papebhyo Moksha Yushami Masuchaha. The concluding instruction of Krishna is to surrender unto him. Sarvatharmam Pradija Mame Kam Sharanam. Sharanam. Surrender. Mame Kam Sharanam. To me alone, surrender. And following Krishna's appearance, to teach the world how to surrender unto Krishna in the most exalted manner, in that exalted manner of the residents of Vrindavan, in that very, very special mood of the residents in Vrindavan, Krishna descended as a worshiper of Krishna to teach how to worship Krishna. There's many other things that can be said about Lord Chaitanya. But unlike many forms of the Lord or great personalities, say reformers of spiritual teaching to restore the pure condition of unalloyed love, unmixed with karma and gyan, just as Ramanuja taught devotion that's unmixed with karma and gyan, but shuddha bhakti. Lord Chaitanya also taught shuddha bhakti, but unlike many other teachers who taught pure devotion, he didn't leave teachings. Madhvacharya left teachings, Ramanujacharya left teachings, Nimbarkacharya left teachings, Vishnuswami left teachings. Lord Chaitanya didn't leave teachings. He left a teacher. He taught a teacher and told his teacher, now you write the teachings. And that principal personality, out of all of the many, many, many volumes of unmixed, unalloyed devotees, Rupa Goswami is foremost. In fact, in the line of Lord Chaitanya, those who are followers of Lord Chaitanya, not exactly called followers of Lord Chaitanya, they're called followers of Rupa Goswami. Because Rupa Goswami was empowered to the fullest degree to represent the teachings or present the teachings that Lord Chaitanya gave in a written form. He compiled volumes. And he guided the exalted Vaishnavas of his time, along with his elder brother, Sanatana Goswami, and his nephew, Jiva Goswami, who, along with other Goswamis of Vrindavan, were residing in Vrindavan under the order of Lord Chaitanya. And during that period of time, prolific devotional writings were produced. And libraries, they were scribes making copies because there weren't printing presses, so they were making copies by hand of the teachings or the writings of the Goswamis. And to this day, literally, those writings of the Goswamis written in Sanskrit are subject matter for PhD thesis for religious studies or Sanskrit scholars of our modern era. Abundant, because the writings are so deep and so profound and so sublime. But chief amongst them was Rupa Goswami. And amongst the many books that he wrote, Prabhupada translated two of them. His mandate, self-imposed mandate, Prabhupada's mandate that he gave himself was to translate the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, 18,000 verses, into the English language for the English-speaking audience. So the world, the uneducated, unspiritually cultured world of Kali Yuga could have access to this sublime literature. But the teachings of Rupa Goswami were so important, he took a time out and translated two of them. One of them is especially prominent because of its comprehensive nature. Bhakti Rasa Amrita Sindhu. The ocean of the nectar of devotion, or nectar of devotion. Prabhupada made a summary study of it in English. And then another is very short, just 11 verses. And we're on verse 5 already. We're almost halfway there. But it's very compressed. It's sutra-like, presenting the amrita, the nectar of the instructions about devotion. So Prabhupada called it nectar of devotion. Excuse me, nectar of instruction. And that's what we're going to be discussing. Here's the basic composition of nectar of instruction. Very simple. The first seven verses are describing Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. Same as what Nectar of Devotion does. There's three parts to Nectar of Devotion. Vaidhi, Bhava Bhakti, and Prema Bhakti. So the first seven verses, we discussed already, 1 through 4. Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, and then verse 8 is like you have to get your telescope and binoculars out to follow this one. Text 8 is spontaneous devotional service, and there's a sadhana for it. And the last three verses are describing Bhava Bhakti and Prema Bhakti. And these same topics, as I said, they're the divisions of Nectar Devotion also. Vaidhi and Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti is one part, Bhava Bhakti is another part, and Prema Bhakti is another part. So there's been a number of commentaries on this Nectar of Instruction, or Upadeshamrita. One of them was composed by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, one of our great acharyas. And from his personal notes on this wonderful book, he's described it this way. This is like out of the 11 verses. The first verse is the symptoms of a self-controlled madhyama adhikari. Madhyama. Madhyama means middle. Uttama is top. And Kanishta is beginning. And Madhyam is in the middle. So someone who's, we're being trained, followers of Rupa Goswami and followers of Srila Prabhupada, are being trained in this Madhyama position from the very beginning practically. So I'm not going to go into detail because I won't even get to the text. I'm just giving you an overview at this point. The middle stage. What are the symptoms of someone who is well established in this middle stage? What are their symptoms? Then the next three. What are the external behaviors and their practices or niyamas? So what, their sense control and mind control, you know, the equilibrium, equipoised status of a madhyama, and then their external behaviors and their devotional practices. And then, this is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's notes, the next ones, starting with what we're going to be discussing today, way up to this spontaneous devotional service and practice stage, the internal progressive stages of development and their vision of how they see the world and how they see others and how they see God and how they see nature and how they see, what's their, the stages of their vision. And the final, the 9 and 10 are sequentially successive orders of worshipable places and worshipable persons within the spiritual realm. And then finally, the highest glory in the entire universe. That's going to be our last class. And then we're going to take off to the spiritual world. So these are Bhaktivinoda Thakur's notes. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in our line of disciplic succession, he was the father of Srila Prabhupada's spiritual master. He's one of our acharyas in our line of disciplic succession. He wrote over 100 books. Very, very prolific. And some in English, some in Sanskrit, some in Bengali, some in the form of songs, some in the form of essays and collections of essays. He was prodigious. So, these are his notes outlining the subject matter of Nectar of Instruction, or Upadeshamrita. Here's a little breakdown. Now we're going back to the Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, the first seven. There's a preface to the book. This is like a little summary of the book. In the preface, Prabhupada writes about the goal of Krishna consciousness and the means to attain it. And for the process of reaching perfection in Krishna consciousness, one has to follow these instructions of the Goswamis, particularly Rupa Goswami, in the matter of controlling the mind and the senses, if we want to achieve the goal, the real fruit. So, the first text addresses dealing with the six urges, or the Sanskrit word is vegam, manasa, krodha, vegam, jiva vegam, different pushings, and the necessity to control them, what happened? Hasn't been showing at all? Just went out. Okay, great. There are prerequisites for spiritual life. As described in the preface, it's necessary to control the mind, it can control the senses, and this details it a bit more. One who has mastered these prerequisites is fit to be a guru. Note, from Bhaktivinoda Thakur's outline, a Madhyama Adhikari, in the middle stage, who is sense controlled and mind controlled, can perform the function of guru. We'll hear some more about this as we go along. There are obstacles in devotional service, and this second text describes what happens if you don't control the mind and the senses. The picture is portrayed. By his own choice, the conditioned soul has fallen under the jurisdiction of material energy. Under its influence, he has to meet the demands of the body, which is a product of the material energy. So text 2 explains how to meet the basic demands of the body in a way that fosters spiritual progress rather than material entanglement. Very valuable, right? Very valuable. Text 3, there are factors that help making progress in devotional service. 6 of them. And Rupa Goswami presents them in the commentary, details them. And where we ended last time we were discussing Nectar of Instruction, there are 6 loving exchanges that are presented in chapter or in text 4. So, in previous lessons, it mentions that one's desires and ambitions develop according to the company one keeps. So, keep good company. So, how to associate with those who are good company? It's through loving exchanges. And text 4 explains what are the nature of those loving exchanges. And Prabhupada in his purport describes how to foster them. How to properly associate with the different types of devotees that are found in text 5 and 6. So I think what I'm going to do is rather than go through the whole 11, we'll just go to text 5, and tomorrow we'll come back to text 6. So, the connection between where we were last time, loving exchanges, is according to someone's position. Someone that's very, very elevated, we associate one way. Someone that's a peer, we associate another way. Someone that's less advanced, we associate another way. Very simple. And then how to identify, as Srimad Bhagavatam presents, how to identify the different stages of spiritual advancement. This also identifies how to understand persons of different advancement and how to associate with them in a proper way. So, in order to apply the six loving exchanges from text 4, one must select proper persons with whom to reciprocate. What kind of Vaishnava should be selected as a friend? And how one should deal with different kinds of Vaishnavas is the subject matter of this verse. All devotees should be respected. But in order to make spiritual advancement, we must associate with serious devotees and distance ourselves from casual association. It's a nice subject. Very relevant. You know, how to establish proper loving relationships, because the other one is speaking of loving relationships, and this is helps one further understand, in addition to the types of loving exchanges, how to do it. So I'm going to jump ahead here, and we'll go right to the text 5. We'll come back to that nice chart tomorrow, I think. So those of you that like Sanskrit, we can chant the verse together. Krishne tiyasya giritam manasadriyeta dikshasti chet patanita vishya bhajatam isham susuryaya bhajana vigyam ananyam anya nindari shunya hridam ipsita sangalabhya. And there's the synonyms. We won't go through all the synonyms. Here's the translation that Prabhupada gave. One should mentally honor the devotee who chants the holy name of the Lord of Lord Krishna. One should offer humble obeisances to the devotee who has undergone spiritual initiation, diksha, and is engaged in worshiping the deity. And one should associate with and faithfully serve that pure devotee who is advanced in undeviated devotional service and whose heart is completely devoid of the propensity to criticize others. Very important standard. We'll hear some more about that standard the rest of our devotional service, but a little bit more in the course of this evening too. So you see what he's doing. The previous verse was loving exchanges, and now he's indicating, Rupa Goswami is indicating different levels of devotees and how to respect this level, respect that level, respect that level. Note that respect is always there in all circumstances, but an appropriate exhibition of that respect. So very quickly summarizing or repeating, in the mind, when seeing a Vaishnav, one who has chanted the holy name, one should respect that Vaishnav, and along with respecting all living entities, especially one who has chanted the holy name or is chanting the holy name. This is Rupa Goswami's teaching. It's expanded certainly in the purport. And then one who has made the commitment, the submission to the line of disciplic succession and has been accepted by that line of disciplic succession, has engaged in the worship of the deity form of the Lord, one should pay obeisances to such person. It's exactly how Prabhupada taught us in our temples. When we greet one another in the morning, this is the instruction that we received as new devotees. We didn't have nectar of instruction. We were just told by Prabhupada, when you see the devotees, each of the devotees, first thing in the morning, you offer obeisances to one another. Rupa Goswami's teaching. And then those that are in this further advanced stage, undeviated devotional service, their heart is completely free from the propensity of criticizing others. One should very eagerly seek out that association. So this is summarizing what we've already said. What kind of Vaishnava must we befriend? There are different kinds or stages or gradations of devotion. How to deal with them in their different stages. The principle, once again, all devotees must be respected. But we must make some kind of clarification point in our mind how to properly respect different persons according to their level of elevation. So here's Prabhupada's teachings from the purport. In order to intelligently apply the sixfold loving reciprocations mentioned in the previous verse, one must select proper persons with careful discrimination. Srila Rupa Goswami, therefore, advises that we should meet with the Vaishnavas in an appropriate way according to their particular status. In this verse, he tells us how to deal with three types of devotees. Again, these same terms, Kanishtha, Majjhima, and Uttama. Beginning, intermediate, and advanced. Very simple. Relationships is where our ego is involved the most. Our dear friend. Our ego. And so it may, if our heart is not pure and we're kind of a little invested in our ego, it may make relationships a little tough. And then there's this not nice thing that sometimes happens. However, as one advances, and that is, one's heart becomes more pure, then we learn how to associate with devotees and from one another receive the blessings of devotees. By the way, I didn't make these images. The one that gets the blame or the credit is Prema Tarangani. This is her work, and I modified some things, but mostly her work. That's hers. So, we have these, to repeat, we have these three levels of devotees, and there are different ways. You're going to see very quickly a whole chart. So pay attention, this is the breakdown of the chart before we see the chart. There's ways of describing these three stages based on adhikar, or that word in English is eligibility or qualification. The impetus for Vaidhi Bhakti. Vaidhi Bhakti again means practice. You know what we're doing. Rise early in the morning and take your bath and worship the deity and perform your chanting and read the scripture and cook and make offerings to the deity. This is Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. That's what we're doing. The impetus for Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti is coming from scripture. And so there's differences in depth in one's faith in the scripture and knowledge of the scripture. So this is one level of determining beginning, intermediate, advanced. There's others, but just make sure we get this first one first. You'll see this word adhikara, so like learn the word if you haven't understood its meaning or its application. There are scriptures enjoined. We do to practices. One's faith in those scriptures and one's knowledge and understanding of the scriptures are beginning, intermediate, advanced. That's one level of looking. Then another is vision, like how you see others, how you see God, how you see the world. And there's beginning, and there's intermediate, and there's advanced. How does one see Krishna? For example, it's possible that one can have very advanced faith and knowledge, but only see Krishna on the altar. This is, by the way, a kanishta position, a beginning position. And it's common. It's common within religions all over the world. People may be very, very learned in the scripture. They may have great faith in their scripture, and to them, the place of worship. Think about it in the Middle East. You know, the synagogue, or the mosque, or the temple, or the church. God is there. And you go there to worship God in the church, or the mosque. And God is there. And I have deep faith in the scripture, and I study the scripture. But so that's one level of advancement, and then there's another way of looking at that same position. One may know lots of verses, but not have realized them. For example. So there's, again, this word adhikar, or adhikari, eligibility, and then bhagavata, a realization. So it's sometimes, the terms are kanishta bhagavat, madhyama bhagavat, uttama bhagavat. You've heard that term before, uttama bhagavat. And there's madhyama bhagavat and kanishta bhagavat. That's their realization. Or their inner vision, how they see Krishna within everyone. It's a little Prabhupada story. I sent this out some year ago or something like that, year and a half ago. It's like a little Prabhupada story. In 1968, something like that, Prabhupada had a heart attack in New York. So he was taken to convalesce by the New Jersey shore. They got a nice place in the summertime, a breeze coming off the ocean. And devotees took turns cooking for Prabhupada and just taking care of his needs as he was convalescing. So one of the devotees was seated by Prabhupada there. He was overlooking the ocean breeze coming, and they looked down, and crawling on the mat where the chair was a slug. Anybody not know what a slug is? One of the little slimy Tungavidya? A slug? Like a snail without the shell? A slug. Okay. And he was slithering along on the mat. And the devotee looked at the slug and went, "Ugh!" And Prabhupada paid attention to what they were, and they said, "Look." They wanted to like get the slug away from Prabhupada. And Prabhupada leaned over and said, "Chant." Not telling the slug to chant, but telling the devotee to chant. And Prabhupada said, "Poor creature. How unfortunate. Give him some good fortune. Chant for him." So, seeing Krishna within the heart of all living entities is the vision of, that's this Bhagavat, Uttama Bhagavat, the vision that Krishna is within the heart of every living being, even the most unfortunate creature. It's not a matter of adjustment, it's a matter of vision. Not just knowing verses, but having it, you know, a vision of the presence of Krishna in all circumstances. So here's this chart, 1, 2, 3 on the left side, and we've spoken about this one, adhikar, and the knowledge of scripture and the faith in scripture. And then the Kanishtha Majjhima and Uttama phase. We spoke a little bit about vision. This is discussed in Srimad Bhagavatam, by the way, where one sees God in the place of worship. Then also it's mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam. There's four stages. We're being trained in this column over here. So we're being trained to see not just we worship God and try to develop our love for God, but then there's devotees, then there's innocent, and then there's hardcore atheists. So we're enjoined by Scripture to see these different divisions and relate in appropriate manner according to these different divisions. We hear a lot about this part right here. But the Uttama sees Krishna in everything, and everything in Krishna. Now, here's from Chaitanya Charitamrita, and it's a little bit in the beginning part of Rupa Goswami's verse. If you chant, this is from Lord Chaitanya. He was asked by devotees. He was asked by Satyaraj Khan from Kalina Gram. I'm a householder. I don't know the purpose of life and how to achieve it. Can you describe to me what is my duty? Nice question. What's my duty as a householder? Lord Chaitanya gave him the following answer. Two things. As far as possible, your duty is chant the holy name of Krishna as much as possible. And the second thing is to serve a devotee whenever there's some opportunity. Serve the devotees. So Satyaraj Khan asked, how do I understand who is a devotee? And he asked the same question 3 years. The first year he got one chance Krishna's name once. He's a devotee. And although that chanting may be not pure, he's chanting. He's chanted, so he should be respected. Then an advanced stage is someone who's chanting, as you see, 24/7, but not in a purified state yet. Trying to become. That's the Madhyama chanter. And one who chants the pure holy name. And just by their association, Lord Chaitanya described, just being in their presence, other people chant. Here's another Prabhupada story. Gopina. The king of the jungle. Okay. Prabhupada story. There was a time when there wasn't terrorist concern in airports. And when that was going on, when somebody would go off to catch a flight, you could go with them to the departure gate. And when they came at the arrivals, you could receive them at the gate. Not anymore. But during that time, when it was time for Prabhupada to depart, not just a devotee would accompany Prabhupada. Hundreds of devotees would accompany Prabhupada, or at least as many as were around. And eventually it got to be the airport, so you can't bring all these people here. You can bring some people to take care of your spiritual master, but you can't bring 100 people. But in the beginning we used to do that. So one time Prabhupada was departing from Stockholm, Sweden. The people in Sweden had never seen a sannyasi or a Vaishnav or an elder sadhu. They never saw one before. So Prabhupada was sitting in the departure lounge waiting for his flight to leave. And the devotees were around. And, a little bit of a crowd was forming just to see, what was going on over there. And one businessman passed by wearing his suit, carrying his briefcase, and he saw Prabhupada, and without any prompting, he set his briefcase down and paid his obeisances. right in the middle of the airport. Just being in the presence of such a personality inspired that kind of submission. And there's a similar story. I think I've told this here before, but Malati describing greeting Prabhupada at the San Francisco airport. Have you heard this one? In the beginning, the devotees didn't have a clue about anything. So this is in the Lower East Side. Many of the young people in the Lower East Side had very little money. So they lived in places where you're not even allowed to live, just like, you know, a loft, where there wasn't a place, there wasn't running water and a place to bathe. So Prabhupada describes this: once a week they would take a bath. And sometimes they would come to Swamiji's place to take a bath. So he would stand in line while they were taking a bath so he could take his bath. And he would cook for everybody. And they would learn from Prabhupada how to cook, and then Prabhupada would go and clean the pots, and because they didn't have any sense of anything. So similarly, Prabhupada didn't teach, you know, in the beginning, he didn't teach the standards of etiquette to pay obeisances. The devotees didn't know to pay obeisances. It came later when we got, you know, a little trained. So it's a long story, but Prabhupada was invited from New York to come to San Francisco to take part in a big function where some popular musicians and invited him to be a speaker on stage along with their music. He was like a celebrity. So he accepted the invitation. And his flight from New York to San Francisco, this was before they had jetways. So it, like in India, where you get down from the plane going down the walkway and then you walk to the airport terminal and then you go upstairs and you get your luggage. So that was the situation, 19, whatever it was, 68, 67, something like that. And the devotees didn't see Prabhupada get off the plane. They thought maybe he missed his plane. So they continued having kirtan waiting at the gate. And then Prabhupada came up the stairs and then turned the corner, because it was like, the stairway was going away from the where the plane landed, coming in, and then coming back up that way, and then turn around and come into the terminal where you all are. So there was a wall to keep people from falling down the stairway. So he went up the stairs, and you could see, because I saw the video of it, his head bobbing, coming up, walking very slowly, and then he turned. And when he turned, everyone immediately paid obeisances. They didn't know to pay obeisances, just being in Prabhupada's presence. They paid obeisances spontaneously. So that's like this one, makes others chant. Just by seeing this personality, they know nothing about chanting, but just seeing the personality, they may chant. So these are stages and the basis of vision, and the basis of chanting, and the basis of scriptural qualification. Here's from Bhaktivinod Thakur. His description is based on faith. This is called Komala Shraddha. We can soft and pliable. Then firm, like Nishtha, firm faith. And then unshakable faith in the advanced stages. So stages based on faith. And then here's another by Rupa Goswami in Nectar of Devotion. Okay, so that's a nice chart. This verse is helping us understand how to move from the beginning to the intermediate, because the first verse is describing the intermediate. So this is helping us understand how to move. Here's a description. Primarily is focused on faith. If you remember from the chart, Bhaktivinoda Thakur describing that. Here's eligibility based upon faith that Krishna bhakti will produce all desirable things. This is a definition from Chaitanya Charitamrita given by Lord Chaitanya himself of what is faith. Faith is confident, firm conviction that by rendering transcendental loving service to Krishna, one automatically performs all subsidiary activities. Such faith is favorable to the charge of devotional service. And that means if I put all my energy in this one thing, all other desirable things will come. That's faith. So out of all of this, we're heading to the home stretch. What's one word that's going to help us advance from Kanishna to Madhyama and so forth? And that's respect. You respect and you respect and respect. Respect whom? Each according to their position. But especially a human being, and amongst human beings, one who chants, or one who's a devotee. And we are to offer respect to ourselves, the devotees, because at least we're trying amongst all living entities. We're hearing and we're trying to take this message to heart. And one who hears and tries to take this message to heart, in course of time, this stage of initiation may come. And emphasis Prabhupada speaks of or writes in this purport of this verse, initiation is not a ritual, but it's a continuous process of hearing and serving in a mood of surrender and submission. He writes, when one has lost all interest in mundane subject matters and is simply interested in transcendental subject matters, this is sound, hearing and speaking, and is prepared to fully surrender to Krishna through the medium of the spiritual master, Diksha can take place. Full surrender means that one has firm faith in both the spiritual master and the process of devotional service, one whose faith is soft and pliable, that's in that Kanishta stage, it should at least come to the stage where it's firm faith. Not unshakable, but firm faith. That's a consideration or condition for initiation, described right in this text. So how can we go from this preliminary stage, beginning stage, and medium, intermediate stage? There are things that we can hold on to that can help pull us along. Initiation, faith, scripture, chanting, associating with persons that have deep vision. There is a nice question or topic that's discussed about the nature of a pure devotee. Here's a nice quote from a lecture given in Vrindavan, exactly from Nectar of Devotion, where Achyutananda is saying, he's reading from Nectar of Devotion, says, first class, second class, and third class devotees, they are pure devotees. He's asking a question, Prabhupada. Yes, pure devotee is anyone who has no other motive except to serve Krishna. It doesn't matter he's first class, second class, or third. Those gradations, Uttama, Madhyama, and Kanishta, Prabhupada is saying, it doesn't matter. Anyabhi lashita shunyam. If he has got some motive, then he's not pure devotee. He may be not advanced, but if he has no motive, then he's pure devotee. If he wants to utilize Krishna for his personal benefit, then he's not pure devotee. He's impure. So first of all, he has to become pure devotee. Let it sink in a little bit, what Prabhupada is saying. He's speaking of motivation, to use Krishna for something I want. Someone's realization may be not so deep. Someone's knowledge of the scripture may not be so deep. It may be deep, it may not be deep. The vision may be deep, may not be deep. What's important, in this example at least, Prabhupada is saying is motivation. Utilizing Krishna to get something. Whatever that something might be. Maybe, you know, some recognition, some honor, some prestige, something, something. So, the message here, relevant to the text 5, is respect should go proportionate to. If someone is chanting, they may even be chanting with some motive, like Dhruva. He was motivated. He wanted something. He wanted a big something. But even in that beginning stage, when he wanted a big something, he should be respected. He was following Narada's instructions, not only the austerities, but his chanting of his mantra. So he's to be respected. And because he was properly following the submission to Narada, he gradually overcame that something. But we can call him a pure devotee, or anyone a pure devotee, by this definition, when their motivation isn't gaining something for themselves from service to Krishna. There's a nice statement, an often quoted statement in this verse, so we're going to spend a little time on it because it's often quoted. Those of you that are a little newer, you are not going to be so familiar with what I'm about to say. Those of you who've been practicing for some time, you're probably pretty familiar with what I'm about to say, because it's in this verse, text 5. A disciple should be careful to accept an uttama adhikarya, spiritual master. So one might ask, what does that mean? Here's the statement directly from Nectar of Instruction. Out of many such Vaishnavas, one may be found to be very seriously engaged in the service of the Lord and strictly following all the regular principles, chanting the prescribed number of rounds on japa beads, and always thinking of how to expand the Krishna consciousness movement. Such a Vaishnava should be accepted as an uttama adhikari, a highly advanced devotee, and his association should always be sought. So think back for a moment on that chart. There were 5 different ways by which one can identify beginning, intermediate, or advanced. Here in this verse, in this purport rather, Prabhupada is identifying these are the conditions by which one should evaluate accepting an uttama adhikari as a spiritual master. Using these criteria, so these are the yardsticks or the measures. This is a little complicated, so I'm going to skip it. What the chart shows is from Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he shows the Kanishta stage goes from this to that, and from that to that, and from that to that. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's a little different. And we won't do that tonight. A little complex. So we're summarizing now. In this verse, Srila Rupa Goswami advises the devotee to be intelligent enough to distinguish between Kanishta, Madhyama, and Uttama, those 3 stages. The devotee should also know his own position. By the way, we're in Madhyama's position. But in Gaudiya line, there's these 3, Kanishta, Madhyama, Uttama. Then they break it down. Kanishta, Kanishta, Madhyama, Kanishta, Uttama, Kanishta. and Kanishta Majjhima, Majjhima Majjhima, Uttama Majjhima. And like that. Kanishta Uttama Majjhima Majjhima, Uttama Uttama. So one should know one's own position and should not try to imitate a devotee situated on a higher platform. Here's from Srimad Bhagavatam. It's quoted, it's in Majjhima Lila Chaitanya Charitamrita, but the quote is from Srimad Bhagavatam, directly cut and paste. This is the beginning stage of Prakrita Bhakta or Kanishta, materialistic devotee, does not purposefully study the scripture and try to understand the actual standard of pure devotional service. Consequently, he does not show proper respect to advanced devotees. He may, however, follow the regular principles learned from his guru or his family who worships the deity. He is to be considered on the material platform, although he is trying to advance in devotional service. Okay. Then there's the Madhyama. Here's the Sanskrit. An intermediate, second-class devotee shows love for the Supreme Lord, so it's for these four. Remember that from the chart? There's four. There's Krishna, we worship God. And then there's the devotee. I make friendships with devotees. There's the innocent. Let me be kind upon those persons who are innocent. And those who are envious, we carefully don't keep close association with them. The crass, atheistic, hardcore, there's some people like that in the world. This is quoted from Srimad Bhagavatam. And then the Uttama position, it's very special. A person advanced in devotional service sees within everything the soul of souls, Krishna. Consequently, he always sees the form of the Supreme Personality Godhead as the cause of all causes. This is now this Bhagavata, or their vision, isn't it? How they see Krishna everywhere. Again, quoted in Srimad Bhagavatam. You notice there's a theme. It's mentioning these three stages and in different ways of analyzing how to view the three stages. The injunction that Prabhupada has given us in his purport is we should become familiar with what those three stages are and respect according to those three stages. So this is further delineation of that chart of about chanting, divisions based on chanting. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, a Maha Bhagavata sees every living entity as a pure spirit soul, such a Maha Bhagavata still experiences special ecstasies and other symptoms upon meeting another Vaishnava. This is a symptom of love of God. Such a Maha Bhagavata feels special ecstatic love upon seeing another living entity directly pleasing the senses of the Supreme. This is from the purport of that earlier quote. We'll go through it a bit more because this is helping us. The purpose of this verse is to help us see stages and by what symptoms, not just like a sentiment, I like the way they smile. Or something. It's scriptural basis of having a proper understanding. A Maha Bhagavata can turn a living entity from abominable material life to the Lord's service. This is the test of a Maha Bhagavata. Although preaching is not meant for a Maha Bhagavata, a Maha Bhagavata can descend to the platform of Madhyama just to convert others to Vaishnavism. Actually, a Maha Bhagavata is fit to spread Krishna consciousness, but he does not distinguish where Krishna consciousness should be spread from where it should not. He thinks that everyone is competent to accept Krishna consciousness if the chance is provided. Nice quote. concluding slide here. This is a picture of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And this comes from his commentary on Chaitanya Charitamrita. The Kanishtha Adhikari, devotees, take full shelter of the chanting of Sri Krishna Nam, knowing it to be supremely beneficial, but they don't realize that the position of the Madhyama Adhikari is above their present position and that they should strive to reach that position at some time in the future. So, the quality of faith in chanting is even at the beginning stage. So that's something that we all should cultivate, honor, and try to develop further. But we should, this advice is, aspire for coming to this other stage. And we've heard a number of descriptions of what this other stage is. So we begin from the beginning. And then we're, I'm saying again now what I said earlier, but Srila Prabhupada introduced his followers very quickly to not just see God in the place of worship, the temple, but to engage in the activities of a Madhyama, to perform Sankirtan, to go and chant congregationally, give the holy name to all types of living entities, to give literature to all types of living entities. Although our position may have been very neophyte, he engaged us that way. And it was nice. And the intent was, by so doing, the qualifications would come. We weren't qualified. But he engaged us according to that, and qualifications gradually would come, or very quickly would come. And then further scriptural training, so we could, just like this verse, see a little more clearly the position of by what standards and criterion one can tell who is advanced, who is intermediate, who is less advanced, and how to variously show respect to those individuals. Okay, there's text 5 summary. Any comments or questions? A little abrupt ending, but any thoughts on this topic? Yes?
Sometimes unknowingly, when we try to over enthusiasm, when we try to serve Uttama Adhikari, so unknowingly, we may commit mistakes or offenses. So that, does that affect our spiritual advancement or when we?
No. No. Let's think of Srila Prabhupada, and like the descriptions I was giving you. Unknowingly so many offenses were made. And in the beginning, Prabhupada didn't even point them out. Because, we weren't capable of doing anything but making offenses. Just chant and take prasadam and hear something was what we're capable of. So, but gradually then, expectation was there to having heard now to perform. And so he was, understandings were given gradually. But it's not the detriment of persons who unknowingly made some mistakes. Prabhupada was forgiving. And similarly, in our contemporary times, same principle. that someone is sincerely trying, just like this mention of, you know, what the standard of pure devotee is, without motivation, trying sincerely. So someone makes a mistake, it's not an offense. Okay? Or it's not taken as an offense. One may feel, oh, I didn't do it right. Or I mistakenly made something, I didn't even know what I was doing and I did something. But that's part of the sincerity. That's what corrects the mistake, is the sincerity of purpose. Yeah? Something else? Yes? Okay.
When one who's trying to give anima is practicing loving exchanges according to the level of devotees, it can sometimes be perceived as being judgmental.
Discriminating and being judgmental are very, very different. The purpose of discriminating, it's a faculty of intelligence, is to discriminate, to tell the difference between one thing and another thing. That's what IQ tests study. You ever looked at IQ tests? That's all they're doing. Can you tell the similarities and the differences? That's all it is. So, the faculty of discrimination is a quality of goodness. So we can tell what's what. So that I can properly repose respect. Now, the other is, you know, largely, not entirely, but largely born of envy, when I derive some satisfaction by finding, aha, here's a flaw. Like in Chaitanya Charitamrita, besides Amoga, that's the son-in-law of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Ishwar Puri had two disciples. Madhavendra Puri, had two disciples. Ishwar Puri and Ramchandra. Ramchandra? Yes, Ramchandra. So his business was finding fault. He just like he went from place to place with his whole program was finding fault. So it wasn't for the purpose of how can I offer respect in an appropriate way. It was just his business was fault finding. So I just sent to one devotee who is presently struggling with something like this and doesn't recognize it, like five files that are of quotes that caution against fault finding and judging. And one of the quotes is from Sridhar Swami in his commentary from Srimad Bhagavatam that says, for a Vaishnava, to even if there is some fault, to criticize that Vaishnava, this is an offense. This is Vaishnav Ninda. So, what do you do? If you're discriminating, here's an Uttama, here's a Madhyama, and here's a Kanishta, because I'm enjoined to discriminate. It's for the purpose of how to appropriately offer respect. Not to judge the person. I'm the judge, and you know they're being judged. Not like that. How to respect in an appropriate manner. Big difference. So the investment of our ego is where the judgment comes in. I'm big, they're small, let me judge them. Something like that. And I'm small, and they're whatever they are, let me understand how to properly respect them. From a position of humility and being enjoined by the duty of a Madhyama, according to these scriptural descriptions. So again, it's in all cases respect and how to properly offer respect, and the other is, you know, right or wrong, guilty or innocent, and I'm aloof. I'm above the fray. I'm deciding who's guilty and who's innocent. Not like that. Second question.
My father's talking about one who doesn't have motive, as a purely motive, to get something from Krishna. So, and you were saying that, you know, it doesn't matter if you're a Nishta or nothing more. It seems to me to be theoretical. Is it really possible that one doesn't have firm faith?
Well, supposing someone isn't very knowledgeable in scripture, but their heart is very simple, and their happiness is whatever it is. They like coming and sweeping the floor of the temple, or they like coming and making garlands, or they like, you know, something, very simple task. Their heart is very, they don't know so much, they're not, you know, very qualified in these other ways, but their heart is very simple, and their happiness is just doing something for Krishna. That person is, it's like the illiterate Brahmin. The description in it means it's a contradiction of terms, an illiterate Brahmin. But in Sri Rangam there was such a person, and Lord Chaitanya did that conversation with him. And although he couldn't read, his devotion was so substantial. You're the true scholar of Bhagavad Gita. Krishna gave him the realizations, or you could say vision, although he didn't have other kinds of qualifications. Simple heart. And third?
It's really we're hearing how even a Madhyama that can control the mind and the senses can be a guru. And then later, an Uttamadhikari should be accepted as a spiritual master.
Can be. I mean, so, sorry for editing, but go ahead.
So, is that referring more to Diksha Guru, and whereas a Madhyama that can control the mind and senses could be Shiksha Guru?
It can either, any. The first verse is describing, let's go back. Well, you know the verse. And such a person, that the verse ends, such a person is capable of accepting disciples all over the world. So it's what to have that qualification of controlling the pushings that are pushed, it's the animal propensities are superseded. One's consciousness is transcendental. Conversely, if one's consciousness isn't transcendental, what's going to rule is the pushings. The animal propensities will rule. Somebody takes something and I snarl. Somebody says something and I get angry, etc., etc. Some object is there and one feels lusty. So there's pushings and one is ruled by those unless consciousness is transcendental. So one whose consciousness is transcendental, that person can control those urges. And there's an external parameter or barometer for understanding the internal consciousness, although you can't see the internal consciousness. Okay? And it's not then continuing on from that first verse, this fifth verse is describing Kanishtha Majjhima Uttama. In the purport, it's like many, many different ways of Kanishtha Majjhima Uttama, according to name, according to faith, according to vision, according to initiation, so on. Something else? Anyone? Back there, anyone? Okay. I guess we're done. Thank you very much. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai.